indigenous elder from Big Mountain, Arizona. He lived his life in resistance to the government's repeated attempts to displace him and his people from Big Mountain. Stay tuned for Stage and Studio with host Demay Roberts. This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, From Our Hands to Yours, celebrating 41 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March 1st through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
Hey, I'm Demay Roberts, Stage and Studio. We're listening to music from Portland composer David Ornette Cherry from his CD, It Could Be Different. Find out more at davidornettecherry.com. Today, we're going to go behind the scenes and go on location to talk with Rose Reardon. She's the Associate Artistic Director of Portland Center Stage. 16 years ago, she started JAW, a playwrights festival, and she's still the director of PCS's largest summer event with four plays and a multitude of events and workshops all happening on one single weekend. That's July 25th and 26th. You can see a complete schedule at pcs.org or stageandstudio.org. Rose Reardon came to my office studio to talk about JAW, a Just Add Water Festival. For her, what makes a festival unusual is its focus on the writer.
Our focus is entirely on the playwright. We reiterate over and over again that directors, actors, staff, dramaturgs, anyone supporting it is considered a resource for the playwright, which is a little bit different than usual because it's often the director sort of guiding what they're going to work on and, you know, the vision. And really we flip that and get all of our cues from the playwright.
So I want to ask you about that because it seems like that in most cases, the playwright isn't served in a New Works Festival as much. You know, it seems like what you're saying is that JAW helps to serve the playwright and the playwriting process. Whereas sometimes with New Works, the director steps in and starts making choices and the playwright is part of it, but it isn't the foremost. It's not as upfront.
I think it depends on, I mean, each organization has sort of their vision and agenda for supporting New Work. So I find no fault in other people's approach. It was just our focus was give all the resources that a playwright could want. And what are you going to do with it? And we sit back and we try to take all of our cues, but being in the driving seat isn't always something that playwrights are used to. So they are in their own creation and in their own room. And if they have a relationship with the director, they are. But we often will get playwrights that come in. It takes a little while for them to acknowledge sort of their job at the table, which is for us to listen to them and for them to come up with where they want to go. You know, what do you want to work on? We're not here to write your play. What do you want to work on?
Well, I want to say that's kind of refreshing, though, because it's usually, not usually, but often, quite often, it's the other way around.
It is in some, yes, it can be. And I think playwrights can enjoy that as well, because it's, I think any attention sometimes when you're creating something new is welcomed. I think what you have to learn how to do as an artist is to take in the information that is of use and let go of the rest, and as well as with JAW, take in the information that's going to be useful for you and let go of the rest, because at the end of the day, it's your creativity, it's your project, it's your baby. But theater by nature is a collaborative art. You get a lot of very opinionated people in the room together, and the fact that something comes out of it is kind of a miracle when you try to throw that much energy at, you know, something, which is why often the director is so key to a project, is we sort of all accept in a way that the director is going to be the one where the buck stops, because you cannot, by committee, it's impossible. So the function here for the director, I think, is to sometimes translate what the playwright is after. And often, you know, what the role that I find when I'm, because I usually direct a project, the role that I find I'm in often is to take what the playwright is saying and translate it into the language an actor understands for a note. I mean, you know, that doesn't mean it's Russian. You know, the playwright often can give a note, but there's no such thing as a universal note. Everybody takes in information differently. Everybody processes differently. So often I find my job is to sort that out and then take the note from the playwright, like, what are you after here? And then find a way to translate that the best way for the actor. But because they're readings as well, it's, you know, we're off the hook a little bit in terms of being resources for the playwright, meaning that, yes, it's a noble cause and we're very proud of it because we are very strict about it, but we're not having to make production decisions.
Well, there's less pressure, isn't there? I mean, there's still pressure, but it's less. I mean, you only have 2 weeks, so
right.
That is kind of intense.
It is very intense, and you're throwing everything you have in 2 weeks at it. And I actually find a really good staged reading is equally captivating and sometimes more captivating. I have seen many full productions of plays that I saw in workshop form that didn't translate.
I know. I'm nodding here because it's hard to communicate that sometimes with perhaps younger theater professionals because they want to see everything happen, right?
Yeah, sure.
But when you have seen as many productions as, you know, a lifetime's worth of productions, right. Sometimes the workshop production, to me, is better. And I can't put my finger on it, and I can't put my finger on why a staged reading might be better than many full productions, but quite often it is.
I think what it is that it gets back to the core of storytelling. So we are not being distracted by, you know, lights and costumes, and we're not, our brain isn't trying to make a bunch of decisions about what does that mean, what does that mean. We're just kind of open and listening. Our own imaginations are sort of deciding, you know, when the staged reader is reading the action, like, we're sort of deciding what is happening.
Yeah, it's almost like the core of storytelling, but also just the essence of the words and the essence of the meaning.
It's
and also there's no delay if somebody, you know, loses their cue or something goes wrong. I guess all of those elements, it seems more flawless in some respects, a really good staged reading.
Well, I think what it is we forgive more. We have a much larger margin of forgiveness because we don't have that expectation. So we're willing because it's a reading. So I think it kind of sort of unlocks a charity in the audience in a way.
I don't know if it's... Well, I understand what you're saying. The expectations aren't quite as high. It's like, you better impress me kind of expectation. But I also think that you really feel like you're part of the process somehow, because you are, it's an experiment and we're all involved, including the audience.
I think that is particularly the case with JAW. Because of the engagement, because of how long festival's been here, we have people who have been here every year coming to see the readings. So they have the history, they feel completely entitled to tell us which ones we should produce, which I love that they're voting. That means they're involved and passionate about it. But I also feel that it's peculiar in a way to Portland in the amount of people who come to the festival. It stuns me every year. I love it so much. The first year we did the festival, I thought, we're going to be lucky if we get 50 people. And we had like 100 and I can't remember how many. And every year, one of my favorite moments is when the playwrights see the people lined up around the block for a reading. That's just awesome.
It's phenomenal, really.
It really is. And I don't know that we've done anything. I just think Portland is weird like that. Like, they like that. And I think the fact that it's free doesn't change the number, really. but it only helps with the spirit of the festival. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think we would still get that kind of attendance, but I love the fact that we offer that to, you know, to our audience.
Well, you're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts talking with Rose Reardon, who is the Associate Artistic Director of Portland Center Stage and also the director, the festival director of JAW. And that's the Just Add Water Playwrights Festival that we're talking about right now. And let's talk about the exact plays. Actually, the whole festival weekend is July 25th and 26th, and it's 4 o'clock and 8 p.m. The shows are 4 o'clock and 8 p.m. on the main stage. And you can get all that info at pcs.org and also on stageandstudio.org. Let's talk about the plays. Oh, we'll start with Keys of the Kingdom. That's by Penny Penniston, and that's Friday, July 25th at 4 o'clock. And so it's about, here's the description, an assistant to the celebrity pastor of an evangelical megachurch, Arthur obeys orders, attacks paperwork, and guards against sin. So what is this play at its heart about?
There's a lot that's being examined here. And one of my favorite things is it's the dynamic between Arthur and an artist that comes down to paint. And she is a lesbian. Her wife comes down. He's been recently married. They all have this sort of curious backstory, but it's the interaction between the two and the conversations they have about and sort of the change that they all go through. I mean, it's not magically delicious and everybody, you know, there's no, you know, we all ride off in the sunset with a brand new understanding of the world, but that's the conversation. And what I liked about it, what we all liked about it, was that it's not just one point of view. You can sort of understand, even if you walk in thinking, well, I'm never going to side with the church, or I'm never going to side with, you know,
the atheist.
Yeah. It's the conversation that feels, I think they make a compelling argument on both sides.
I'm amazed you can keep track of all this. So the next play is...
amazed too, because it's early to May.
So it's DB is the next one that we're going to talk about, and it is by Tommy Smith. And I guess it's set in 1971, is that correct? And it's a man calling himself DB Cooper boards a plane in Portland. So that's very Portland, you know, a Portland-based play. And he hijacks it. You know, we've all heard DB Cooper, and he's never seen again over Mount Rainier. And so is this about DB Cooper? I mean, it's called DB.
Yeah, it's about DB Cooper. And I think, I mean, I am a mystery and sort of conspiracy junkie. You know, I love stuff like that. And I've always been intrigued about, you know, they found a little bit of money on a beach. And it's not really just a, you know, docu-theater about DB Cooper. Tommy takes the idea of storytelling and the idea of what happened and does some very interesting things with how the characters tell the story and how they switch roles, and as they are taught, you know, they sort of take us through the events of probably the more well-known events of what happened, but also some, I don't know if it's flights of fancy on Tommy's part. There's some information that I wasn't aware, not that I'm an expert on DB Cooper, but there were some things about the story that I wasn't quite clear on or hadn't heard before. It's a very Portland thing, but it's also a Portland story. But it's all, he's doing some very interesting things with the form. While he's telling the story, which intrigued me.
Well, it intrigues me, too, and I have a feeling that it's going to be kind of popular. That's at 8 o'clock on Friday, July 25th. And then there's one that's set in Antarctica, and it's called The Royal Society of Antarctica by Matt Smart, and that's Saturday, July 26th at 4 p.m. And it's about a woman whose mother disappeared shortly after she gave birth to her, I guess, and then 24 years later, she returns to Antarctica, to the McMurdo Station in Antarctica. She gets a job scrubbing toilets there, but she's basically trying to search for the meaning of what happened to her mom.
Right. She's raised by her father. She was given, her mother gave birth to her in Antarctica, and then disappeared. and we follow her journey, basically. And then when we get to Antarctica, we meet all the sort of characters who've chosen this really isolated, weirdly minimalist life and find their own weird bits of joy. And we do stay with the mystery of what happened. I think it becomes less and less important to sort of the core of the story. Very interesting characters. And I think it gives a really sort of claustrophobic view. What would that really be like? You know, to not to be able to go outside, and sometimes going outside is certain death. But there's also something, I think, that draws them all there, and I think that's what we start to peel away and learn.
I think it's fascinating. I like anything set in Antarctica, even if it's set inside of a room in Antarctica.
Yeah, it's mysterious land.
Mysterious land, and it brings your imagination to life, which is the next play, A Life, by Adam Bach, and that's Saturday, July 26th at 8 p.m., and the description is very simple. Nate Martin is a simple man living his simple life in a simple world, sort of. Well, I guess not really, actually. Okay. Adam Bach is somebody you guys like a lot at Portland Center Stage because you've produced him, is it twice already?
We did The Receptionist, The Thugs. He's been at the festival one, two. This will be his third time. And we are commissioning him, and this is our commission.
So what is it about this? You've already decided.
I mean, that play description is Adam Bach. That's how he writes. A Life is about a man who has a very simple life. You know, simple meaning, you know, he's got friends, he has a job, he has an apartment, very normal life. And we get to know him briefly, and then he dies. And what we follow, or, you know, there's two things going on. Partially, it's what happens to you when you die, like, what's the experience around you? And I, of course, want to push the envelope. But I mean, we workshopped this briefly last, I want to say January, but I could be lying. January, February, maybe March. Anyways, for a week. And it was the first time that we had our hands on the script, you know, as part of the commission. And then the one thing he's not afraid of, and one thing that I absolutely love, is sort of experimenting with stillness. And I love the idea of, like, sometimes I'll get a script from Adam and it says day passes. When we did Phaedra in San Francisco together, there was one scene that simply said day passes, and then the next scene. I'm like, how the, you know, but that's what I love about it. I love experimenting, like, okay, what would that mean visually to an audience? Not that you don't want to indulge or try the patience, or, but at the same time, we need to be able to flirt with or experiment with what is tolerable or what is interesting. I mean, I personally could watch, I'm a bit of a voyeur though. I mean, I think that's why I'm in theater. I love watching people. So I could watch people just living for a long time without becoming bored.
I want to make a confession when you said that. Here's a confession. Sometimes when you're driving at night, especially if you're a passenger, because I can't do this while I'm driving, but if you're a passenger and you pass like open windows are well lit, especially like rich people's houses, you know, and you see these beautiful furniture and you see kind of like a set. Yeah. And so it piques my imagination. Is that sort of what you're talking about?
Well, I have dogs that I walk at night, and often I'm intrigued by when people's windows are open, looking in. If I lived in a city high rise, I would have a telescope.
Rear window.
Yeah, totally. But you know what? Even when I was little, I was totally fascinated with the idea of invisible cream. And here was my hope, was that if I could get some invisible cream and put it on, it wasn't to like go get candy or, I don't know, rob a bank. I never could figure out, like, the money, how that would work, because the money would be floating through the air, so I don't know how white people would rob a bank with invisible cream. But it was so I could go into people's houses and just watch them live. Like, I would probably go into their living room and just sit there and watch them make dinner and stuff. I don't know why I find that fascinating. It's the banal things I find fascinating. I don't want to watch people intimately. I don't want to watch people naked. You know, it's really just life stuff that I find, you know, how people respond to the world and how people, what do they do when they're alone or, you know, so.
And that's what you like about Adam Bach.
Yes, he takes the ordinary. The more ordinary it is, the more brilliant it is. And there's always something extraordinary that happens. So he'll take something really ordinary, like Nate. He's just a guy who has friends, he's single, he just broke up with his boyfriend. You know, just normal stuff when we meet him. There's, you know, there's not a lingering illness or anything. And then boom, he dies in his apartment.
Well, A Life by Adam Bach is July 26th at 8 p.m. And that's at JAW. And the complete schedule is at pcs.org as well as stageandstudio.org. In the time remaining, I just wanted to give a shout out for some of the events that are happening around this on that weekend. The press play schedule, which is from 3 to 8 p.m., there's going to be all kinds of performance, and I mean, there's all kinds of things. Push Leg is doing something at 3:15, and then we've got a pole dance company too, and we've got all
it's
kinds
a festival
of stuff.
Without a pole dance company,
well,
right?
No kidding. But there's the point being that if you go to just even one of the plays, you should go like an hour early because there'll be something happening in the lobby and other areas, right?
Yeah, we sort of open the windows and the sidewalk and invite the community in. Because we do the seating sort of European style where we don't open the doors till 5 before 8, that's partially what is happening too, is we like to have a lot going on for people to, you know, also chat with each other. There's people are like, why don't you open the doors? And I love the idea of people milling around the lobby, talking to each other, checking out the other, you know, artists or work that's going on in the room, hanging out.
Dancers, marionettes, pole dancing. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff happening. So do come early because it starts at 3 o'clock and runs through 8 o'clock on each of those days.
Right. It'll stop for the reading. Kelsey Tyler, who marinates all this, does a great job of thinking about visually what will work in our space. And every year we learn something. So if one year, I can't remember what it was, we had this great performance in the lobby, but the weather was really great, so a lot of people were out. So we're constantly trying to balance, like, what works when.
And also, just a shout out for, there's a couple of artist labs or community artist labs where you can actually learn skills about playwriting. So there's ones on reading plays to become a better playwright, reality to fiction, transforming real events into engaging theater. That's done by Tommy Smith, who is one of the playwrights. And then All You Need is Yourself, Neutral Mask, and Stage Presence for Actors with Teddy Bergman. I mean, these are really quite wonderful to offer free.
Yes, they are done with a lottery system, but it's all part of the festival. Again, it's like, what can we offer back to the community? The readings and then also these labs and these other performances. The other thing I wanted to mention, too, is that there are promising playwrights, which is local young playwrights, teenagers, who graduated out of our Visions and Voices playwriting school, if you will. It's Matt Zarepsky, who's been running the program for quite some time, does a brilliant job of teaching kids playwriting. We have a little playwriting reading for them at the end of the school year, and then we pick 4 to 6 young playwrights to go through JAW, just like the professional playwrights do. And they kind of get mentored through that process, and they're going to have their own night of short plays on the 24th. It's amazing what they do under Matt's tutelage, and they actually write the plays in the 2 weeks that they're there. It's a really, really heartwarming and a fun night of theater.
So even though at a time when a lot of theater companies might, you know, say, oh, we've got 2 months where we could rest a little bit before we gear up for another 10-show season, you do JAW, which seems to me quite literally to be a gift back to the community in many ways.
I would say, I think of it as a gift, of course. I don't know that. Yes, We are dark right now, which means we're not producing any shows. However, weirdly, it is the busiest time of the year because we're prepping for the next year and getting ready for Jaw. Jaw, though, oddly, even though it's a lot of work and a lot of hours, and there's something energizing about it that actually, even though we're at the theater 24/7 and it's crazy how much work goes into putting the festival together, once they're all in the room, like right now, we just finalized one situation, and I was texting in the car just before I came in here, and we are completely cast, we're ready to go, everybody's booked, everybody's coming in on Sunday. There's something so exciting about it, and then while we're doing it, it's like it restores you artistically, and so... Yeah, it takes a lot of energy, but I would have to say it's also a gift for the people who actually work on the festival, that there's a strange sort of theater camp quality to it and a lot of silliness that happens. We work our butts off, but we also make sure that we do things like bowling and picnics, and because I think most of the work actually happens outside of the room in talking over a sandwich or... you know, walking to get a ice cream together, you know. Adam and I have had many conversations just yakking around, you know what I mean, that have helped what we're doing in the room with the actors. So there's equal parts social and equal parts rehearsal. Every day we have something called the afternoon tea, which everybody congregates on the theater slab, and we have tea and cookies, and it's a way for all the projects to get back together and talk to each other, which I think is incredibly important.
It almost sounds like an artist retreat.
Sort of, except that we include the community. So we're not completely off by ourselves, but there is something restorative about it, I would say.
It's almost like you're getting back to the reasons why you do theater in many respects.
Exactly.
Because I remember the very first one that you were doing. It was a brand new thing. And it's kind of been your puppy for a while, hasn't it?
Well, I started it, so it's been my puppy the whole time.
The whole time. It's been your dog, and it's grown up.
Yeah, it's grown up. Oh, my God. Well, the first year, it was me. I always say it was me and a bag of bagels.
Well, that's the name of your production company, Me and a Bag of Bagels.
Me and a Bag of Bagels, yeah. I did the whole, that first 2 years, I had no assistance. No, I did everything, morning, noon, and night, and loved every minute of it.
Rose Reardon, thanks so much for joining me today on Stage and Studio, and break legs on Jaw.
Thank you, Demand. Thank you for your continued support. Really appreciate it.
That was Rose Reardon, Associate Artistic Director of Portland Center Stage and the Director of Jaw, a Playwrights Festival. The festival runs July 25th and 26th. Performances are free and open to the public. It's on the main stage of the Girding Theater at the Armory. That's located at 128 Northwest 11th Avenue in Portland. No reservations are required for the shows, but I recommend that you get there early to line up because it's in high demand. For more info on the show or the press play events or the workshops, contact the box office at PCS at 503-445-3700. That's 445-3700. Or visit their site at pcs.org, or you can find all the info and the schedule on Stage and Studio, where I have a complete schedule of all the events at Jaw. That's it for Stage and Studio. I'll have this show online later today at stageandstudio.org, as well as the podcast on iTunes. Just subscribe to it, and you can hear all the archive shows on iTunes, too. Also, like us on facebook.com/stage_studio. Or you can tweet me at @StageTheLetterNStudio. Till next time, I'm Demay Roberts. We're going to go out with more music from David Ornette Cherry from his CD, It Could Be Different. Find out more at davidornettecherry.com.
Tune in Tuesday night at 6 p.m. to Out Loud, KWU's queer culture radio show.
Out Loud celebrates and serves the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, and allied communities.
Out Loud features interviews with local and national community groups, authors, musical talent, and anyone from the queer community.
Connect with us online at kboo.fm/outloud. Tune in Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 11:30. Up next, Art Focus is off today. Instead, we'll hear a program from the series Sprouts, remembering the life of Leonard Benali, an Indigenous elder from Big Mountain, Arizona.
Ya'ate! Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a national audience, produced at a different location every week.
We were forced to talk English, and then we would be punished for speaking our own language here.
I'm Christina Onnestad in San Francisco, California. Today on Sprouts, we remember the life of Leonard Benali, Diné, or Navajo elder from Big Mountain, Arizona.
We're naturally here. Spiritually, we're here. But legally and technically, we're not. We don't exist.
Leonard Benali lived and died on his Aboriginal homeland near Black Mesa on Big Mountain, Arizona. He lived his life in resistance to the government's repeated attempts to displace him and his people from Big Mountain, a coal-rich region highly desired by mining interests like Peabody Coal Company. In the 1970s, about 20,000 Diné people were displaced from the area in response to what some called a land dispute between the Hopi and Navajo. Several thousand remained, refusing to leave their land. A few hundred remain to this day,